So what if you can't touch the sky? It doesn't mean you shouldn't try. Do you wanna fly?
Ladies and gents, welcome back to this High Times episodic adventure. This week we talked to Alison Peebles, who played Alice in the show. You guys will remember her as Eddie's wife, the mother-in-law that we love to love, if that is such a thing, because nobody loves a mother-in-law. But we do actually love Alison Peebles, because she was an absolute delight to speak to. So we have that coming up just now. Alison talks to us about playing Alice in the show and her time on the set. She even throws in a great wee story about John Morrison running about the set with Wang out, so make sure to listen out for that. But if you guys have been enjoying this show and really want to keep the momentum going and listen to every episode as it comes out, please make sure to hit the subscribe button, even give the podcast a share, so that other people get to bask in the glory of what was a great TV show that was on too late for everybody to see, and that is High Times. So I'm not going to waste any more of your time babbling on. Ladies and gentlemen, Alison Peebles.
Joining us on the Jibber Jabber podcast for another High Time special is everybody's mother-in-law, is Alison Peebles. How are you, Alison?
You mean everybody's favourite?
Well, I don't think there is such a thing as a favourite mother-in-law, right? And I think you portrayed her very, very well in High Times. However, when it gets to the second series and Eddie kind of, you know, Eddie has his dad troubles, I think that's when you see the real beauty of that character, Alice, because that's when she kind of becomes, you know, you'd expect her, like, he's not coming to stay here, but instead she's like, you have to, it's your dad. You know, I think that's when we really see the heart of Alice. Yeah. I mean, it's a shame it took a full season to get there, right?
She was menopausal, come on!
Yeah, we'll speak about all of that. It was a great part. I mean, how did it come to you? Was this just something that your agent put you forward for,
did you ask to do it? Remember when you said this? I can't even remember what happened. I don't remember whether, which is, I apologise to anybody who actually, you know, if they sort of said, oh, would you do this? I absolutely can't remember if my agent set me up for it, if it was somebody recommended me, if I was just Davey or James or somebody asked me. I can't remember. That's me being, that's my age showing.
we've found that a few times, but it's because it has been a while and there are some memory issues with it. We've had that with a few of the previous ones. Like, how did it happen? I can't remember.
that usually I remember things like that. That's something they usually remember. Like, I certainly don't think I couldn't have auditioned for it because I would have remembered that, you know?
Yeah. Well, that's always good if you don't have to audition.
Yeah, the part probably just found you, right?
they looked through some mug shots at the police station. Pick me out.
I mean, the guys that are on that show, you'd pretty much worked with before, like John Morrison, Stephen McCall. So I suppose, you know, word of mouth, maybe something along those kind of lines.
I think Stephen had a lot to do with it. I mean, you know, because he was a mate of John Rooney's anyway. Yeah. So I think he had a lot to do with, you know, casting and getting it on and everything, you know, which fair praise to him. Brilliant. Yeah.
When you read the script for Alice, were you just like, this is right up my street? Or did you have to kind of come at your comfort zone to be like, how will I play this?
Oh, God, no, I'm a menopausal woman. Actually, I was going to the menopause anyway, so it's completely accurate. But that doesn't matter. The fact is, I was like, oh no, same as that. All right, okay. No, I thought it was brilliant. I loved the fact that I think like John's writing is so perfect, is wonderful, because he manages to get so much different layers and depth into things. I mean, like she was like, you know, this classic scene when Eddie comes back from the jail and she's just like raging at him, you know, and just like, and she doesn't let up for quite a while, you know. It's
kinda, a full season,
full season, but you know, she had her issues, you know, and also he deserved it. You can see that there's a deep love between them as well. I mean, there's a real, you know, which is lovely, because, and he kind of understands, he's like, oh god, but he kind of gets where she's coming from as well. Yeah. Which is really lovely.
There's only a couple of times where it seems to get too much for Eddie, where he just has to leave. But most of the time he's like, that was maybe I deserve that. But
exactly. He's not been exactly a shining example, so he knows he's got to take the
run. He never became the man that she left her family for, right? Never quite stood up to the pedestal that she had him on to, abandon her family. So I suppose there is, you can kind of, when you strip back Alice's character, you do kind of understand why she's bitter in the first series. She's you know, life's repeating itself. She's now looking after a grandchild that she kind of would have preferred happened later on in Claire's life. And then you've got
that Claire had a partner, and that, and also that she, there's also a part that I think there's a lot of fear as well, because back, but she's like, he's promised her so many times that he wouldn't be, you know, doing anything dodgy and getting caught and all that. And that's happened repeatedly. And so there's part of it that she's just like, there's this kind of, how long is this going to last? And a fear of making promises, and a fear of, like, you know, sort of making anything too solid. I mean, that is solid, the relationship's solid, but that she can't show a glint of, too much of a glint of, like, kindness in a way. So she trusts him.
Yeah, I think she also sees the same in Jimmy as well, right? It's almost like she's looking at a younger Eddie, and that's why she's got a lot of disdain for him. That's at least what I got from watching it.
Yeah, well, that's her fear. I mean, like, obviously Jimmy's not really like that, but that's what she thinks. She thinks he's playing the guitar. I mean, for God's sake. You know,
college, at your age, you should have a job.
exactly. It's like, what are you doing? What are you... You know, playing around with, you know. but so there's a lot of that as well. And also, yes, the fact that her daughter's got pregnant and she's doesn't originally know who the partner is, Alice doesn't, but, you know, all that is kind of, again, and they're in this high rise and just, you know, fear of, like, and disappointment, I suppose, as well, you know.
Not quite the picket fence. Yeah. I think it
is. Actually, Alice is the first one to kind of put two and two together with Rab and Claire.
In the first episode.
In the very first episode. I don't know how that's a kind of... She's got this kind of sense.
Yeah. She's a mother. Mother always knows best, right?
Oh, yeah, that's right, yeah. She susses folk out, really. They're either... up or down. Measures with Alice.
No, a mother never says somebody's all right. they're either lovely or you should stay away from him. I'm still working on my mother-in-law. So.
We'll let her hear this then.
I don't think she knows how to work a computer, right?
an iPad. She's getting there with an iPad.
We're available there. there's a term, and I found this term coming at my head when I was watching Alice, and it was there's a term that's colder than a mother-in-law's embrace. And I thought, like, she is just the embodiment of that, you know?
Yeah.
Which was great. Yeah. for that anyway, of course. So you had kind of worked with John Morrison before, he was saying. So was it kind of good to kind of rekindle with John Morrison, and what was
it?
It
was lovely. It was great. I'd worked with him in a series called Psychos, which was Channel 4, and we lived in Croydon. We filmed it in Croydon. Really good series. Dougie Henshaw was the lead. It was about psychiatric hospital, and I was one of the nurses. John was one of the patients. I was trying to think back then how long ago. It was a long time ago, but yeah, it was great. It was lovely to work with John. He's so experienced anyway on film and television and camera, and he's got great quality, and it's just lovely. I mean, it was great. It was great to be part of the team, and he was great to be, you can always trust him, you know,
Yeah. Really nice to us. We were just speaking to John just the other day there. He was really nice, and he sends all his love to you. He said that, and so did also Judith. They said, you know, together you guys were like a wee family on the set, because everything felt real because of the way it was filmed and you spent so much time together. So she said it was like a little wee family, and John.
Yeah, it was like a wee kind of, it was really nice just to, when we were all together, just it did feel very, that you felt really real, that there was a lot of almost like there was a lot of unspoken things going on all the time, you know, just as a family, like a family. But where is John, just to diversify?
He's in Glasgow right now, eh?
Oh, he is in Glasgow.
Yeah.
He's still living out in, where's it? Strath?
Yeah, he's looking to get away. He said he was going to leave until COVID hit.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Yeah, he was looking
at it. I thought he might have, because he was doing Vera in Northumberland or wherever it is.
Yeah, that's where he was talking about moving to.
Oh, really? Yeah,
funnily enough. I mean, it'd make it easier for work, right enough. that's some commute.
God, yeah.
I mean, it's not, hopefully if COVID moves out of the way and everybody can kind of start getting back to normal, though, there can be a High Times reunion of sorts.
But it would be fantastic. Do you know what? It would be amazing to do a High Times 15 years on or whatever. Mm-hmm.
Well, they it's the already space? In motion. It's in motion.
Is it?
Yeah. Had Stephen mentioned that to you? I don't know.
No.
Yeah, I mean, we've pretty much secured a venue. And just really need a date and everybody to be up for it, which everybody seems to be, and it can be a thing.
All right, God.
So that'll be something for you and the audience to all kind of. It would be really nice to see the magic of you guys coming together.
Yeah, and then we can get another series.
Hey, again, amen to that. What's the space? that was Kenny. Unfortunate that Kenny only did go for two series, and it's everybody that we've spoken to. Yeah, they say that. It really was a love project for everyone. How are your thoughts on, like, would you have liked to have seen it go? I mean, it could have gone for how long, you know, 5-6?
It could have gone if it was completely political why it went. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know what all the ins and outs are. There's all these different stories at the time, but it was totally sabotaged. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, they really shot themselves in the foot because it is a very, very special. I mean, like, you know, I'm not saying this just because we're on this. It was because mm-hmm. I think it really was. It did something that other series don't do. It was authentic about the kind of where it was set in this high rise with these people, this mix of people. It dealt with so many issues, you know, like without it being issue based because it was funny. First and foremost, it was funny. And it was also, there was a lot of depth to it because there was, like, you know, tackling, you know, Alzheimer's, drugs, you know, obesity, you know, menopause, all sorts of the criminal things, everything. Yeah. You know, it was so many things in that were led by the characters and the situation. And John's writing was brilliant. There was never a note that was off. He just understood the place, the situation, the characters. He brought together a really interesting mix of ages and people to sort of show that. I think nowadays certain changes would probably be made, but I mean, you know, to do with a sort of more of a mixture of ethnicity and everything. But it was just so, and it was so fresh. And honestly, I mean, I just think that, I mean, I would be, I'll tell you a wee funny story. Just to, last week, I live in a building with different flats, and we've had builders in the bottom ground floor, two ground floor flats for the last months, and our water was turned off, and we all went pear-shaped, and we're all, last Friday, we were all raging, we need our water back, we need our back, we're coming up to the weekend and all this. Next thing is, this guy, I'm shouting across, I see all the workers starting to go away in their vans, and I'm shouting out to this guy, he says, "You're not going, are you? You're leaving with no water." He says, no, it's all right, I'll come up and see you. He came up, and he said, "Were you in High Times?"
No way.
Brilliant.
And I went, yeah. And he went, "My daughter was the baby."
Oh, no way.
Oh, wow.
No way. Yeah.
That's brilliant. His daughter. And he said that she's 16 now, and her name's Robin, and she's 16 now, and she's a singer-songwriter.
That's right.
And you know her, do you?
Well, no, we know of what she's been up to. She also reached out to Judith not too long ago, so Judith kind of gave us a bit of background,
All right, excellent, because, you know, and it was just amazing. He says, "Well, I'm not with her mum anymore." He was a joiner, actually. He wasn't a plumber, but it was just amazing. It was like, wow. And I remember him as a really skinny, the both of them were really skinny and kind of, but they were great parents, and he's all sort of, you know, muscled and, you know.
Rough and ready. Wow. That's strange, because we spoke to Judith the other day, and she came on And she was like, excuse my haircut, I had to cut it while I was in quarantine. But it looks just like Claire's does in season two. It's just these wee nuances keep popping up, right? And you just met the Chloe's actual real life dad. That's insane.
Wow, that's brilliant, isn't it?
Hey, wasn't
brilliant.
It Rob Campbell?
I knew it. Oh, that's insane, that.
Yeah,
it's great.
Amazing that obviously it goes to show that there is still a fondness out there for the show, and Kevin and I are relative newcomers to it. We only seen it after speaking to Stephen. Stephen came to my house to do an interview before the COVID thing started,
right?
And he mentioned High Times, and we hadn't seen it, and then we sought it out after, and the both of us were just blown away by it. It's so well written. It's so funny.
It's so funny, yeah. Did you feel that it, so if you just come to it fresh, did you feel it kind of like stood the test of time and everything?
Absolutely.
100%. Yeah. I actually, Paul McCall asked us the same question the other day. I said, the only thing that doesn't stand the test of time was Jimmy's hair. And he almost seemed offended by it.
That's because everybody keeps taking cheap shots at him recently.
there's things like it's when they pull out the kind of 15-year-old mobile phones and stuff like that. But right. when it comes to the kind of essence of what
content,
the show is, I mean, I think budget restraints at the time. I mean, that would kind of contribute to the lack of diversity that we were talking about a minute ago, because you don't get the opportunity to. Well, you can't have too many families, because that's more money, it's more actors, it's more work. Then you've got, like, you can't get away from the flats. There's basically nothing away from the flats in the entire series. Mm-hmm. I think given the right attention and the right budget, it's we could bring it back.
Yeah. I think it's one of those, it's like, you know, everybody goes on about, like, there's certain programs like Fawlty Towers, for instance, and it's nothing like, you can't compare them in any way, but there's something, and like Extras or whatever, you know, they only do a couple, two or three seasons. I mean, obviously they got more seasons than me, but they're gems. They're complete gems. And I think they could easily have gone to four or five or six seasons. There was a lot more to explore, and a lot we could have brought a lot different people, change people around. There was just so much in it, you know, and it was fun. I remember a few years ago, and I was trying to get a bus, and these Neds for
this one. You're still allowed to say that.
I know exactly. Well, what, you know, these young men.
The young team.
the young team. We're sort of like, because I was like, it was when I could still run, you know, it was like, I can't even run now, you know. You know I've got MS.
All right.
I think John mentioned it. I think it was actually around the time that you were filming that.
Yeah.
It cropped
yeah,
up.
Yeah, no, I was already diagnosed with it by that time. Right. Yeah, anyway, that's diverting. I'll just go back to the story and tell you. But I was running for this bus, and then there were these guys going, oh, hey. And I was like, oh, my God. And they were coming towards me, and they were chatting. And I was like, oh, my God. And they went, are you in High Times? And I was like, yes. My bus went past. I missed the bus.
What?
And they were like, oh, we love it. We're brilliant. It's like, and there were like five of them, and they were just like raving about it. And I was like, oh, it was just fantastic to get that.
It's not very often.
On the bus.
It's not very often you see a group of Neds running towards somebody just to be nice.
true. I mean, it's one of those things. I think if it got the right kind of spotlight on TV, it would be, and it is for me, it's up there with like Still Game, Chewing the Fat and all the great Scottish TV series.
Yeah.
It's a bit different because the word I would use is real. There's more realistic elements to that show than that's why it stands out from these other mentioned TV series. But I just think, you know, it covers everything that's realistic. You know, at least every character in that show, you know someone that's like it or is going through the same kind of thing. Do you know what I mean? And that's what the beauty, I think John Rooney is so in the shadows of how good he is as a writer. I don't think he gets the recognition that he deserves, or even, you know, they should be battering his door down for
him. I think he's quite angry about that, and it's understandable. Mm-hmm. But
yeah,
he is absolutely, I mean, that the writing for that was absolutely impeccable. And I think as you're saying about comparing it with other Scottish, Still Game and that, mm-hmm. I think what it does is that it takes huge risks as well. Yeah. I mean, like showing a couple of, you know, guys, you know, watching porn and, you know, growing weed and all that. And it's just, you know, it's just great because it's just like, they're just, and not, you know, it takes a while for, you know, Rab, for Stephen's character to sort of, you know, it's the baby that kind of,
yeah,
provokes them a bit, but other than that, they're just a couple of just like, oh, I can't even, and it's just great. I mean, it's like, that's like the royal family. It's like not pushing. No, it's very, very, I think, you know, it's really brilliant writing.
One of the key things I think is really good about the show is for someone sitting home watching that and seeing these different characters, and this is what kind of what I said to you at the beginning. Like, it allows you to not judge people in society, because look, you've got the Krabbits, you know, mother-in-law, but you've got to look back through your character, and we kind of understand, okay, this is why. We look at the stoners, right? All the stoners, they're deadbeats, waste of society. But then you look deeper again, it's like, they're not stupid. They're very, actually really intelligent. And Rab becomes selfless.
Well,
as well.
Maybe Rab's intelligent.
Aye, I think Jake's a different. He's a different breed. Like,
yeah. He's a different planet.
And, you know, it's funny. That's the character that John Rooney based himself on was Jake. Right?
Really?
Aye.
Yeah.
Oh, he was Rab. That's amazing.
So did I. But no, he was on the other night, and he told us that Jake pretty much was him. That was his life while he was writing High Times.
Wow.
Crazy, right?
That's amazing. God.
I think that wee sequence when Rab's kind of he's training Jake how to go for the job interview but not get the job is one of the funniest things I've ever seen. And then he's going for the interview and he's like, what's that you're wearing? He's like, it's my shirt. He says, where's your interview shirt? The one with all the hash buns and soup stains on it. And he said, it's needing ironed. That's what a great line. It seems so simple a line, but it's not. That's a really clever joke, and it just lands perfectly as well.
Yeah, and that's I think that's symptomatic of all of it, you know, of all the writing is just like these wee things, these gems that come out with it.
You had your own one as well. It was Happy Birthday, Alky. that was brilliant. Obviously, kind of tapping into the. There's another issue, the dyslexia thing. The fact that Eddie gets out of jail and he doesn't know how to fill in an application form.
Yeah, exactly. Absolutely.
It's sad and true, isn't it?
Yep. And it's not just the dyslexia. Well, I mean, it wasn't in that case the dyslexia, but there are a lot of people in those situations who have never learned to read properly. Not because there's people with dyslexia, but there's people that have just never really been because of the where they live, where they come from, the situation. Yeah. Never really learned to read. There's a lot of people that can't read. I mean, it's just scary these days. You know.
I know. It's something you don't really think about too often, but there's probably a lot more of that going on than you would care to think about.
I was talking to somebody, well, it was about last year sometime, and they were talking about somebody they work with, and they discovered eventually that this person couldn't read, but they were so skilled. They were in their 50s, 60s. Mm-hmm. They were so skilled at hiding it.
Right.
You know, because they'd hid it all their lives, you know, but it was just tragic, you know. It's just like, anyway.
I mean, that's pretty cool that you, when one sense is gone, I know it's not a sense, but when one sense goes, another heightens. So through not being able to read, they kind of got the talent for hiding it. I think that itself is quite magical, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. For sure. So Judith, when we first see her character Claire, is learning, I think it's Spanish, in her room. That's when Eddie comes in and he's like, your mom's just set to put me with a bunch of carnations. Right? So you see, I would imagine that Alice is, you know, your character, Alice has actually, because Eddie doesn't read or write, you know, she's gone that extra mile to kind of push Claire to kind of, and these, again, this is just the wee nuances in the way that John writes and makes you think, because I wondered to myself, why? Because she never used that language she was learning at the start. And I just put it down to, it must have been because of how Eddie was unable to speak, you know, kind of write and form proper sentences and whatnot, that maybe because of how Alice was, you know, she was quite, she wanted that perfect life almost, that she kind of just put more into Claire. And that's maybe why...
Well, I didn't have the advantages herself, but, you know, probably was looking at how where her life had gone, and she wanted Claire to not waste her life. Yeah. And, you know, that's one of the reasons why she's like, you know, with the baby, who the grandchild, who she loves, but, you know, she's like, oh, God, you know, what have you done, you know?
Yeah.
And I think it is interesting. It's those little subtle things about trying to better herself and, you know, pushing her to do something and get a proper education, I think, is really important to Alice. And that's one of the disappointments, I suppose.
Yeah. Again, and then it's good to kind of see, like, from married men, it's kind of good to see what goes through the mind of a mother-in-law. And you can kind of see that. And that, again, that explains the whole disdain towards Jimmy. She doesn't want a repeat of history. And then when she sees Claire moving in at the click of her fingers to Jimmy, she's already got a child that she doesn't know who the dad's at. It's just... you can see the haze kind of take over, and that's why Jimmy kind of is like, oh, fucking, do you know what I mean? At least it makes sense. It makes sense as to why you would have a moaning mother-in-law.
A moaning mother-in-law?
Well, for the first season, she tries in the second, she buys him a wee plectrum, right? And then she gets kicked out.
And then she smacks the lips on him, just for good measure.
Oh, yeah, yeah. What was that like? Yeah. What was that scene? Yeah. What was that scene like?
Oh, it was Paul good McCoy? Fun. It was great. I don't know what Paul thought of it. I was like, excuse me, but I'm going to go for this, right? But no, it was really good. It was great, because you just see her kind of at that party. I mean, first of all, she's losing her daughter and grandchild. Well, she's not losing them, but they're going away, so that's the kind of thing. And so she's just like wellying into the drink, and it's like, you know, just anaesthetizing herself, because it's like, oh God, don't know what to think about it, but and trying to have a good time, so she's just like knocking it back. But then it's like, oh hey, hello there.
It's like starting to see who she sees in you.
God. So the series actually done really, really well. You know, critically, you guys won a BAFTA for the first series. How did that feel after, you know, how it was treated, and how it didn't have such a huge budget, but because of the cast were so talented, the writer was phenomenal, the directors and all the crew just really put their heart into it. For you, was that just like, putting the flag in the sand?
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely, because it's like you're always fighting, whatever thing is, you're always fighting against the kind of people upstairs with the money and the budgets and the power of the whether it's the, you know, Independence or BBC or whatever, but there's a whole, you know, raft of people that are make decisions that you've got no control over, and they're not creative decisions, and so they're making decisions about something and they don't know what they've got in their hands, you know.
Yeah.
And so getting the BAFTA was fantastic, because it does like go, yes, we've done it, you know. That was, you know, and it also was brilliant for John particularly, because he worked so hard on it, and it's kind of, you know, it's a real, you know, kind of, you know, for him to get that kind of accolade is really deserved and important, because, you know, unfortunately, as we were talking earlier, it's like, where did that go? Because why is he not being snapped up by all these people? I just don't get it. I think there's a lot of to do with anti-Scottish racism, basically, from the networks and everything. They're really, I mean, it's just, and it's got worse and worse and worse with this government. But anyway, let's not get into politics.
You would think that STV wouldn't be anti-Scottish, right?
Well, you'd think, but no, come on. No, yeah, it's all right if you're Cuthy. You know, and it's all kind of wee knitted hats and bunnets. But not, you know, it was such, as we've said, you know, it was so fresh and risk-taking, and showed an angle on people's lives, a reality, with a wit and humour and depth and everything. But it was much, you know, it wasn't just like, ah, this is a comedy, let's make, you know, like, exaggerate these people. These people were real, you know?
Absolutely.
And I think that's really important. And they don't see it, you know.
I think the only fake thing about that show was when Rab lifts his legs and does a CGI fart in it later. Like, that's probably the only fake thing that I was like, that's not real.
Hey, I've seen it happen. It can happen. Maybe just not on command. So
yeah.
I was 14 once.
And that was just like, that's where health and safety comes in. No, you can't do that.
Oh,
you could have done that for real.
Probably could.
Not have a partner, is he?
We did notice that John Rooney loves his fart gags, because we got sent a script. I don't know if you've read it. It's called Stoners. And John, I think it was after the two series had finished, he still had a lot more to write, and there was a script that he wrote which was basically the episode where Jake and Rab go to Amsterdam. It's what happens at Amsterdam. You read it?
No, I've not read it. No, I remember him talking about it.
Yeah, well, he sent that to us, and again,
it's hilarious.
Do you know what? Do you know what was good about it? It's because we already knew the characters, so I could I could visualize, I could hear their voices when I was reading it. But it's absolutely funny, and it was great just to finally have something that come from that project, like the High Times project, that we, because once we finished the two series, we're like, oh, that's it. There's nothing else. It leaves you wanting more, eh? Yeah. So we got that script, and I was like, yes. And I was taking my time going through it because I didn't want to rush it because I was enjoying it. And John Rooney just never lost it. You know what I mean? Even now, I think if he was to write a third series, I think it would go down a treat.
And there's a lot more to, obviously, if you were to write a third series and just, like, taking those characters now, you know, there'd be a lot of stuff, like, huge changes politically and all sorts of things. And
exactly.
It'd be very interesting. And, of course, those flats are all demolished.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Flats that we filmed them as, because when we filmed them, they were, you know, they'd been kind of, they were condemned, although they were, it wasn't till, you know, some years later, it was the Commonwealth Company, didn't know what it was for at that time, but... And there were still, you know, some people living in the other blocks, but they were all, most of them had been cleared out. Really sort of sad, you know, just terrible, you know, just the way, well.
Life, yeah, it seems to, it's almost like they treat the people that live there as disposable, and they don't matter. I mean, people build lives, although they don't own their homes.
Yeah.
These people build lives in these homes. They make them their homes. They decorate them. That's where they've got all their memories. I mean, you could get a kid that's grown up their entire time in a house, who gets shifted out of it for no reason that, well, not no reason, but out with their control. And it just seems completely unfair. So that, again, that could be, it's another aspect that John could maybe
look into. That would be a great one.
You listening, John? You listening?
Yeah.
John's listening. So obviously it was like 15 years ago that you first started on the set of High Times. But if say tomorrow season 3 was to premiere, where would you see all the characters, including your character? Where would you see them all now? Because there's been a bit of time passed.
I think Rab would have sorted himself out.
I think
he would have a job. I think he'd be doing, I don't know what he'd be doing, but I think he'd be working in some kind of deal. Because Rab was really clever and he read and he understood, you know, Sartre and all that.
Yeah.
Alice, I think, well, she'd be my age.
She wouldn't have aged since series 2, is what you're saying.
No.
Right?
She'd be modelling. She'd have her own. I think Karen Eddy would be. I think maybe she would have got her. No, she wouldn't have got. I'm trying to think. Oh God, she might have got herself a wee job, a wee business. I think she'd got a wee business. That she's got a wee home business or something.
You know,
selling
what I would
face
like
masks.
To think.
Selling face masks. That's what it is these days.
In my mind, right. This is just where I kind of saw it. Right. So it goes to series 3, and so what Alice has been able to do is take. The real story of her life, right? She left her family to be with a guy that didn't quite match up, kind of put her through the runner. And she writes about it like one of those bloggers and becomes a best-selling author, right?
Really?
So that by the time she's still with Eddie, right? But she's used all of that time with Eddie to kind of relate to other people in her situation, younger and thing. And she almost becomes someone that you'd see on Loose Women, right? Because that's where exactly where you would see her, right? But she also has this, she also has this twinge where she's like, I don't give a fuck what PC is, right? So if I'm saying it, I'm saying it. And that's where I'd see her troubles come in series three, where she starts off this best-selling author, and then she says one thing, sends out the wrong tweet, because Alice can tweet, right? She sends out the wrong tweet, and that's where she kind of is stumbling down, and now Eddie's her rock. I'd like to see that. That for me is where I'd see it.
That's great. Yeah, because she could be like sort of the kind of, you know, like, you know, she's you know, our novel that she's podcasting and vlogging and blogging and all that. And she's kind of a kind of guru of like, kind of like, this is what you should do, you know.
Agony aunt, yeah.
Agony aunt type. Right. Thing. Yeah.
And I just think it's a positive way to take. She gave herself from when she met Eddie, right up till Jimmy and Claire leave. She gave her full life to these people, to her family. Yeah, yeah. And I just think there comes a point maybe between season two and where a possible series three is, where she goes, you know what, it's time to be Alice. Time to give, because that's what she wanted. That's what you could see. She was just like, what have I got to show for it? You know, and I think at some point she must have in her head gone, you know, it's never too late. It really is never too late. And she just sat down and was like,
she just started small. It's like she just started doing something that's small without this sort of, you know, and then it becomes this bigger thing, and it's like, yeah, no, I think that's a great idea. Well done. Yeah, you get on to John with that then.
I don't know how he does it. I have no idea how he does it.
I just think.
way too much thinking time in your hands.
Well, you can never stop thinking. Your head's always there, man. But that'd be pretty cool. I mean, there would have to be a way to bring them all back together. And I think even the flats being gone, I think there has to be an instant, maybe someone dies. But then again, not everybody in the show were that close to the point, you know, if one person died, the whole block would come back. But I think there are ways to kind of incorporate them all back. Or, you know, a lot of them haven't moved on, you know?
Yeah.
Because that happens.
Yeah, some of them wouldn't have moved on. God knows what would have happened to Jake.
Well, I'd like to think if he wasn't with Rab, right, and this is always the impression I've got, and I've said it to John, that Jake probably would have done better in society and life if he wasn't led astray by Rab. And I think his mother probably told him that. And I think if there's a little bit of tension between them, and say a year goes past where they don't spend that much time together, and then he does kind of in that year make himself a bit more respectable and kind of break away from the Rab and Jake kind of thing. But you know what will have to happen at that point? Rab goes to find Jake, and before you know it, they're in somebody's boat getting an eye. Do you know what I mean?
Oh. Yeah, or Jake could have joined the police or something.
Exactly.
he probably could get in now, to be honest.
I know, exactly.
Yeah, but he's a cop that rides a bicycle, though. He doesn't get any weapons. He's got a whistle. Constantly being teased by his co-workers. Shows your baton, Jake. He's like, shut up!
I mean, Jake's catchphrase is pretty much, I don't get it. He never gets any. He never gets any jokes. He's just. He looks completely gormless. But it's part of his charm. And I've heard a lot of good things about Alan McCafferty's acting. Who was it? I'm sure it was John Rooney that described him as like a Scottish Peter Sellers.
Oh yeah, it was amazing. Yeah. Do you know where he is now?
We're still trying.
Of all of you guys, he's the only one that's yet to give us the go-ahead that he's up for it. But I think Stephen's still kind of
working on him.
Yeah, try to get that going. So whatever he's doing, we hope he's doing well.
All right.
But you know, looking back on the show, if John was to call you tomorrow and say, "Look, I've got a script for series three. The plans are in place. Are you up for it?" What would you say?
Try and stop me.
That's the best thing. I mean, because when you think about it, when you think about that space of time, I suppose Eddie and Alice are probably the ones you would just imagine just kind of went on with life just the same as, right? Because they're the mother and father that become the granny and granddad. And you always go to your granny's house because your granny's house is always there. And your granny's always there, right? But it would be cool to see, and I think that's one of the, it would be really cool to see Alice do something different. You know, and I just thought that would be really interesting. So you never know, and I quite believe in the power of positivity. And if you will something into place, maybe it'll just happen, right?
Brilliant.
Yeah, absolutely.
No, it was such an amazing experience. And because of this, I started to watch. I watched them again on the sort of iPlayer type thing, and And I hadn't watched it for years, obviously. Mm. And I was like, oh, God, this is really good.
That's still right, yeah.
It's like, you know, I knew it was good at the time, but I didn't. But just having all those that time apart and then mm-hmm. looking at it again and going, oh, God. And I just so enjoyed it. You know, yeah. It's just like really just everybody and all the different stories and everything, which yeah. is brilliant. Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah.
It's been a big part of our lives for the past couple of months. we've binged it multiple times now. I think wives are getting kind of fed up of it now. it's another program where the more you watch it, you see things that you missed the first time or yeah. the second time. It's very layered. And like there was one moment that I only spotted it the last time I watched it, and it was when when Paddy had put his shoes in the bread bin.
Oh, yes.
And Eddie said, well, what are they, loafers? And then you, Alice is like, she gets her angry face on, she's like, that's no funny, then walks off laughing.
She's sort of ready to laugh. She's kind of like going, and then she goes,
there's the face, that's the face.
It's wee things like that. Like I remember seeing her saying, that's no funny, and walking away, but I didn't notice just that wee laugh coming on her face just as she turned to go out the door.
Yeah. And James Grant, lovely James Grant, he's passed now, but oh my God. I worked with him and I directed a short film that he was in, and he was, I've always rated him as an actor and always loved him as an actor. Mm-hmm. Paddy was just, he was such a lovely actor and really mischievous.
Yeah, I like to think that scene, and I always thought, I wonder if you were laughing real because of how he delivered it. It's the part where he slapped you, but you're now sitting down with an ice pack on, and he's sitting there talking to you, and you have a bit of a to and fro with John Morrison, and he walks away going, ah, blah, and you go, you've got anger issues. And then Paddy looks over and goes, did that bastard do that to your eye? And you just kind of like, you kind of give up, but you laugh at the same time. You're just like, and I wondered if, you know, was when you were laughing in character, did a lot of that come from like actually laughing at what was being said?
No, not really. No. I think, you know, sometimes I can't remember instances where, you know, it does happen where, you know, it's just the way somebody says it online. You're kind of, you know what the lines are and everything. You, sometimes the way somebody says it, you're like, and you have to stop yourself. But then I don't think it was laughing. It was just like, I would enjoy it. But there is something you're right about, the fact that you really enjoy each other's performances. Mm-hmm. You just enjoy the way people, but you also have to, you know, remember that you're maybe, it's not, you know, you've maybe done a rehearsal and a take, couple of, you know, takes and mm-hmm. different things, you know. But it was just it was just lovely to play.
Just good acting.
Good acting,
Is there any kind of stories that you do recall where you were trying to film a scene and you just couldn't get through it because it was so funny, or even really funny stories while watching other people on the set?
Do you know, I can't actually, because I can't remember.
That's what they all say. They've all said the same thing.
And there were loads. There was loads of stories. If you caught us like a year or two after it, we would have had loads of stories of like that. But I can't think of them now.
Yeah.
Just, you know, if anybody's written a diary or John with the person, he would have, but he wasn't on set all the time. But mm-hmm. if somebody's written a diary and wrote it down, that would be the thing. But you know, there was lots of occasions. There was loads of stuff. You know.
Yeah.
But I honestly can't remember any particular.
we'll get one golden moment from someone, right?
Oh, right. Except for when Eddie gets his willy out. Did he tell you about that?
No, he didn't actually. Fill us in. No pun intended.
He mentioned that.
Well, it's always that. Right, I'm sure he'll not mind me saying this. But it's always a thing. If there's nudity in a scene, mm-hmm. you know, it's always like everybody's very respectful and close set and all that kind of thing. And he was just like, ah, fuck it. And and he just like shook it about and went, hey, it is.
No way.
Like, basically, get it over with. Come on.
That takes a confidence to do that.
Those poor wee Christians. Hilarious. Oh man, that's brilliant. So looking back on that, would you say that High Times is up there with some of the projects you work on? Where would you rate it?
Oh, definitely. It's one of the, you know, one top five kind of things.
That's yeah, definitely because
and especially, you know, looking, you know, having, you know, looked at it, viewed it again and seeing how good it is and how how important I think it is, and you know what it's saying in this, because there's so many, it hits so many things, important issues in people's lives of different kinds.
Yeah.
But also it's got great humor, like you're talking about those different little moments and lines which you just and they're not heavily planted or like here's a gag. It's just the way it's just written, and you know, like the way people see things and say things. I mean, where John has seen things and says things and puts it into the characters' mouths is fantastic.
Yeah,
I totally agree.
Really special.
I mean, it is on the STV player now, like you mentioned, but it's, you still have to search for it. I think they need to make more of an effort with it.
It needs more
of a push by STV to try and kind of rekindle the love for that show and for it to find its new audience. We're new to it, and it's the best TV we've seen in God knows
how long. Absolutely.
Well, hopefully this might do something. I think that is really important, because see, if you know, it's always the way of things, like, you know, John will have faced this lots of times where he's like writing something and they go, oh no, we've had a drama about high rises, no, we don't want another one. You know, it's always like these things, oh no, we've had a drama about I don't know, cyclists with wooden legs or something. We've had that, but we can't have another one, you know. So they do that, you know, and it's like, and then they go, oh no, we're looking for, well, they always have from, no, we're looking for series at the moment, no, we're looking for one-offs, no, we're looking for this, we're looking for that, and then you just break through with something. You sort of go something that they want formats, and they want. I'm just contradicting myself, but I mean, they want formats as well, but they want formulas, and then if something new comes along, they don't have the confidence in it until somebody like, if America was to have said, oh my God, or some other, you know, had picked up and gone, this is the best thing, you know, then they would have had more confidence in it.
It's they don't seem to have that feeling about police shows. That's everything that comes out is to do with the police. It's certainly or the dramas. Every drama that comes out is another police drama, whether it's a fictional thing or based on a true story. And don't get me wrong, some of them are excellent, but some of them are just so formulaic. You're like, oh, this again? It's like, come on. Have a bit of a stomach about it. And
I know. All telly is these days, it's like police shows, hospital dramas, food, and sort of
panorama.
Yeah, people shagging on screen.
That's true. By the I've said this to Kevin before. It was one of the things that put me off watching Game of Thrones the first time. There's too much shagging in it.
Well, I've not seen it.
It's one of these things where if I'd watched it when I was 15, brilliant. But it's like, I'm a grown man now. I don't need to see that all the time.
Yeah, I know.
It just gets kind of gratuitous. We need something that's got substance behind it and some realism.
It is 2020 now, and the way that we consume content has changed dramatically from when High Times kind of was around. So I totally believe, with the right conversations, the right ideas, that there's a place for High Times in 2020.
Yeah.
So watch the space, and I think this is a good starting place, and we'll definitely make that reunion happen. It will be in Scotland. We can give you more details after the show about that, but it's definitely something that will be good for the cast, for John Rooney, the crew, and there'll be an audience there. I mean, there's a 4K cinema screen as well to air some of the episodes. So
brilliant.
It'll be something that we've got.
That's another thing I just want to say quickly is that, because we talked about John and the cast, and the team was fantastic. And it's the crew as well, crew, production team and the crew and everything. Everybody was just really, you know, because it was low budget, and we were having to push, and the directors and everything, and everybody was fantastic.
Yeah.
And that was really special as well.
Well, we've got Caroline Kidd. She'll be coming up soon as well.
And David McKay.
And we're going to get some stories from them as well. And they will definitely be part of what we're trying to do. So,
absolutely.
Yeah, again, watch this space.
Fantastic. Excellent.
So, you've been an absolute pleasure to speak to, Alison. And you're welcome back on the show anytime you want. If you want to come on and just talk about regular TV stuff,
Then, well, I'll come back and do something if you want.
Absolutely, that'd be brilliant.
Super. But,
thank you again for joining us and talking about Alice. And we really hope that this kind of sets the rockets behind what we think and what we kind of believe and feel is missing in 2020. And that's something like John Rooney's writing and High Times and a cast like yourselves, also very talented, with still so much more to give. So it'd be great to kind of see that happen.
Brilliant. Thank you very much. That was a real pleasure. I really enjoyed it.
Thank you.
Thanks very much, Alice. Thank you.
Huge thanks to Alison, another woman from the cast of High Times that just hasn't aged. If anything, she looks younger now than what she did in the show. How is that even possible? Can't wait for lockdown to be over so that we can kind of put together this High Times reunion and have all these wonderful people in the one place. And speaking of wonderful people from High Times, next week you must join us because we speak to the producer of the award-winning TV series High Times, that is Carolyn Kidd. She, I don't want to give too much away, but she's one you don't want to miss. If you've ever wondered what a producer does, you're going to find out the difference between a director and a producer, some of her great stories on the set, some of the stuff she knew, some of the stuff she didn't, and just her all-round experience. So make sure you guys tune in next week to hear that. So make sure you go ahead and subscribe, like on Facebook and whatnot, do all the cool stuff, and keep this momentum going. Thanks very much for tuning in this week, and we will see you next week.
Gotta be careful when you come upon smiling faces. Gonna take you places you've never been before.